This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. It's time for Law and Behold, our ongoing series aimed at improving constitutional literacy among Malaysians, done in collaboration with the Malaysian Bar and the University of Malaya's Faculty of Law. So today, we're going to look at some of the attempts by some opposition politicians to move a confidence vote for Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad in Parliament, and you know, the talks of a formation of a Pakatan National Government. So that has left many people confused. Is there any provision in the federal constitution for such a confidence vote to be brought to the Dewan Rakyat? And does it actually mean anything, or is it just meaningless political exercise? So we're going to discuss this and more with Emeritus Professor Dato' Dr. Shahd Salim Farooqi, who is a Professor of Constitutional Law at the University of Malaya, and Lim Wee Jiat, who is a constitutional lawyer. Welcome, gentlemen. How are you today?
Good. Great.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Always good to have you guys on the show. So let's get to the news. You know, PAS intends to table a vote of confidence in Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad's leadership in Dewan Rakyat next month. So apparently the tabling of this vote of confidence was decided unanimously by the PAS Central Leadership Council during its monthly meeting in early February. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on this whole thing?
Well, to begin with, a motion of confidence or no confidence by the opposition against the Prime Minister is certainly not mentioned in the Constitution. The Constitution basically talks about the possibility of a vote of no confidence. Mm-hmm. Article 43 says that if the Prime Minister loses the support of a majority of the members of the House, then he's got some alternatives which we'll look into later on. But there's no mention whatsoever of the opposition introducing a vote of confidence in a sitting prime minister. The standing orders of the Dewan Rakyat also have no such provision. I'm going to report to you, and this may surprise. Actually, the standing orders, in fact, don't even have an explicit provision for a vote of no confidence. But possibility of motions is there. A lot of standing orders deal with motions of all types. Mm-hmm. A further factor is there is no precedent, as far as I know, in 62 years. Well, maybe I should say 60 from 59 onwards, 60 years for an opposition to introduce a motion like that for the government. Vijit will tell you what is behind all this. I think this is all political design to drive a wedge between the various factions of the Pakatan Harapan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it is unheard of in Malaysia's history and possibly in the Commonwealth, as yes. far as my research goes, I stand corrected. A motion of confidence is normally brought by members of parliament from the governing coalition. Mm-hmm. So parliament, they will normally table a motion that parliament has confidence in this particular government, or possibly a government can designate a particular vote on a bill as being as a matter of confidence. In other words, if this vote fails on this particular bill, then the government will resign. Mm-hmm. So that happened in 1944 when Winston Churchill wanted to introduce an education bill to seek equal pay for female teachers. Now, he lost on a very narrow majority of one. He was furious, and then he went back to parliament, and then he declared that I want a re-vote, and this time it is as a matter of confidence. And true enough, Parliament passed that particular bill with a 400-plus majority. Oh. So the government can use bills as a matter of confidence. And even big and major set-piece votes, for example, the budget, it can certainly be said that if the vote on the budget fails, it is a signal that the government has lost confidence. So the vote of confidence in gist comes from the government usually. It doesn't come from the opposition, and it's very unusual. And my personal thoughts are that PAS, really there is an ulterior purpose for introducing a motion of confidence, possibly to drive wedge between certain personalities within the Pakatan Harapan coalition. So that could possibly be the true intention. It's not really a bona fide attempt to show support to the Prime Minister, if I may add.
Okay.
If I could add to that, Mr. Speaker will have a discretion mm-hmm. to say that this is a waste of time. This is not a matter of priority.
Yeah.
And I fully agree with Vajit here that vote of confidence is basically an endeavor of the party in power. And it, in some circumstances, it's quite necessary. For example, if the prime minister dies, and a new prime minister takes over, mm-hmm. new leader takes over, he may want on the floor a vote of confidence in him. I think that's what happened in 1976 on the death of Tun Razak. Barisan members passed a vote of confidence in favor of Tun Hussein Onn. Mm-hmm. Or if, let us say, there's a change of leadership, the PM resigns, a new leader is asked to take over, but there is some uncertainty in terms of whether he has or does not have the support of the coalition. In such a situation, what's necessary is for the king to give him a week or 2 weeks and say, test your strength on the floor of the house and let's solve the issue of stability through this vote. So I think a vote of confidence is something that the government in power needs. And the government in power will initiate, not somebody from the opposition side.
I mean, because isn't the fact that Tun M is prime minister, doesn't that automatically mean that he already garners confidence of more than half of the parliament's representatives?
Yeah, sure.
Indeed.
You don't score a goal in your own goalpost. You score a goal in somebody else's goalpost.
Yeah. Oh, dear. So, I mean, some of the comments I've been reading, you know, they call it, these are just regular folk, you know, they say it's absurd and childish politicking. Lim Wan Ing, he reportedly said that PAS was confused of its role in parliament for proposing this because, you know, that's not what they're there to do. You know, they should be, you know, as a sensible opposition, they should be debating about the economy, education, health, welfare, you know, those sorts of things.
I mean, there is no need for it. The ruling party has a comfortable support. Mm-hmm. There is absolutely, it's an absolute waste of time mm-hmm. of the Devan Raya to introduce this kind of motion.
Okay. All right. So I think we can agree here that it was just some politicking going on, right? Meaningless political exercise. Those were my words. But let's talk about vote of no confidence. No confidence. So last year, I remember that, you know, Tun M was facing the possibility of that, you know, late last year. So how does that work in these sorts of situations?
Well, before we talk about a vote of no confidence, let me quickly mention to all our listeners that actually this vote of no confidence in some respect reflects the very ugly, dark side of parliamentary democracy in the sense that there may have been an electoral verdict, a clear electoral verdict in favor of a person who leads a coalition. Mm-hmm. So he came to the premiership as a result of the electoral triumph. But on a vote of no confidence on the floor, you can dismiss him. So in a way, a vote of no confidence defeats the electoral result. Let's take Perak 2009. Mm-hmm. The coalition came to power with 56% of the popular vote. But because three people decided to lompat, mm-hmm. Perhaps they were practicing for the next Asia Games, hop, step and jump. Three of them, two from PKR and one from DAP. The government fell. And a party or a coalition that had actually 43 or so percent of the vote came to power over another that had 56% of the vote. So from a majority, let me just check, I forget the numbers here. It was a difference of three. The three moved, I think it was 29-32 and became 32-29,
yeah,
that kind of thing.
Something like that.
It's very
so
close, yeah.
That's the ugly side, one of the ugly sides of this vote of no confidence. A second one is, this is something raised in the newspapers and you also made this point. The Yang Di Pertonagong has appointed someone because in the opinion of the Yang Di Pertonagong, the person commands the confidence. A vote of no confidence can undo the appointment made by the Yang Di Pertonagong. A third ugly aspect of this vote of no confidence is, sadly, we know that votes of no confidence are often the result of money politics. Mm-hmm. They're the result of horse trading, that the result of actually promises in case you cross the floor, you defect. So this is the ugly side. But of course, the other side of the story is that in our parliamentary system, the government is supposed to be responsible, accountable, and answerable. The government is the government because it commands the confidence of a majority in the lower house. Yeah. And so our system, unlike the presidential system in the USA, in our system, yes, the government must maintain a majority as a precondition of survival. And if it loses that confidence, then a number of very significant, ugly, or possibly ugly consequences result. But we'll cover that later on.
Yeah. Okay. I think in more advanced democracies, a vote of no confidence is actually an effective tool to gauge whether the government still has majority support.
Mm-hmm.
And majority support is a core value of the parliamentary democracy system. And also it's a form of accountability to the government.
Sure.
But if you look at the success rate, there are some studies which show that only 5% of vote of no confidences have succeeded in advanced party democracies. It has succeeded in very rare circumstances, for example, in 1979, Margaret Thatcher's in the opposition, you know, proposed a vote of no confidence against James Callaghan's government, and it succeeded.
Succeeded, yes.
With one vote only, and it fell, a general election ensued, and Margaret Thatcher's Conservative Party came into power. So it has utility in the past,
mm-hmm.
And it's a political vehicle for the opposition to show that the government has lost support. And it's a legitimate vehicle. But of course, when it comes to money politics, when it comes to democracies which are not too advanced, it can be an ugly tool for certain political parties.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to talk a little bit about the mechanics of how it works. So normally an opposition would table a vote of no confidence. And if a majority of members in parliament votes for that vote of no confidence, then essentially the government has lost support. And I think that in that circumstances, the prime minister could have two options. He could go to the Yang Diputuan Agong to dissolve parliament,
mm-hmm.
in which case the Yang Diputuan Agong has the
discretion yes.
to accept the dissolution, in which case a general election ensues,
mm-hmm.
or the Yang Diputuan Agong can reject the dissolution and invite other coalitions to nominate another person to be the prime minister, which can command confidence of the majority. Alternatively, the prime minister can resign and the Yang Diputuan Agong again, you know, can invite political parties to nominate someone as prime minister. So that's how a vote of no confidence starts and gets carried through.
Yeah, actually, if the prime minister loses the vote of no confidence, and I agree that this is a tool for testing your popularity nationwide. I think Mrs. Thatcher's, James Callaghan's example.
Yeah.
I understand only twice in the last century.
Yes.
In England, one was, I think, Ramsay MacDonald, another mm-hmm. one was James Callaghan. In Malaysia, no prime minister has ever forfeited the confidence at the federal level, but at the state level, we have several examples. Stephen Kalongninkan in 1964 lost the vote, I'm sorry to report, twice. first time he lost, not a vote of no confidence on the floor, but there was a petition against him and he was dismissed by the governor.
Mm. Okay.
He went to the court and he got reinstated.
Okay.
But then the government declared emergency, federal government declared emergency,
yes.
And then he was dismissed a second time. So Stephen Kalongninkan was removed twice, first time on a petition signed by not 51%, 50%, which is not a majority.
Yes.
And second time was, on a vote of no confidence on the floor. Then, of course, we know Selangor MB Dato Haji Harun Idris, 1976. And Kelantan MB Dato Muhammad Nasir, 1977. We also know Dato Joseph Pairin Kitengan of Sabah, 1994. He didn't lose on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
He won the election, hands down. But within a fortnight, his majority evaporated because some of the PBS members were very good in hop, step and jump. And I jokingly tell my class that the next Asia Games, we should send
MPs,
some of them,
yeah,
some of them for, you know,
for these events,
Representing Malaysia in the hop, step and jump. And that though, Sri Dr. Mohammad Nizar Jamaluddin of Perak in 2009 lost his leadership position because his majority evaporated due to three party hoppers. So the prime minister loses his right to govern. But I have to just add a little bit to your learned presentation. This does not necessarily mean that he will step down and someone else from the opposition will come to power. Mm-hmm. Because there are some complications. One complication is this. Opposition itself may be divided on the choice of a leader.
That's right. Mm.
In which case, the Yang Di Pertuan Agong will be put in the limelight. He will be put in a position where his sagacity, his wisdom, his statesmanship, his political acumen will have to play a role. His Majesty will have four or five choices. His Majesty could exercise his awesome power to appoint a new prime minister. Since this one has lost confidence, he appoints someone else, gives that person 1 week or 2 weeks to prove his majority on the floor of the House.
So this is in the Constitution?
In the Constitution, it does say that if a prime minister loses confidence, then unless at his request the Yang Di Pertuan Agong dissolves the House for an election, the prime minister must resign.
Okay.
Implied is that the king will appoint a new prime minister because even though someone may have lost confidence, the Yang Di Pertuan Agong cannot rule the country on his own.
That's right.
The constitution does not know of any interim period where the king rules on his own because the PM has lost confidence. So the king can choose a new prime minister who must satisfy three requirements. Mm-hmm. Number one, he must be from the Dewan Rakyat. Number two, the PM must, in the opinion of the Yang Di Pertuan Agong, command the confidence of a majority of their members.
Okay.
And number three, the person who is nominated must be a citizen by operation of law, not a citizen by naturalization or by registration. So that was the second choice. The first one was appoint a new prime minister who meets all the requirements. Number two, the YDPA, the Yang Di Pertuan Agong, may appoint an interim caretaker prime minister if no one has a commanding majority. And let me tell you, in Australia, it has happened. Sometimes the interim chief minister or prime minister of the state, as they call him, actually is in power for months because those who threw out the previous prime minister have not been able to determine as to who should take over. So politics is a dirty affair in this respect. Sometimes you dismiss someone, but you don't have a clear-cut leader. The third choice for the PM is to try to work out a unity government. If really nothing works, the Yang Di Pertuan Agong may become actually a statesman trying to bring people together for a unity government. He cannot say, since you all can't make up your mind, okay, I'm going to make all the decisions. He has to have a government.
Okay.
Number four, he could agree to dissolve the House for a general election.
So he has that power to make that decision.
Yes, but I have to clarify one thing, and maybe you could assist me on this, Wajid. I don't think the Yang Di Pertuan Agong can call an election on his own. He has to have a PM, acting PM, interim PM, to advise him. I remember this incident in Australia, I think 1975, when Whitlam could not pass the budget in the lower house. And so the country was in a crisis. No one's salaries can be paid. The army, the police, including the Governor General, his salary cannot be paid.
Yeah.
So the Governor General called Whitlam and said, why don't you advise me to call a general election. Go back to the people. Let the people help you.
Mm-hmm.
The budget was defeated in the Senate.
I see.
It was passed in the lower house because he had a majority. In the upper house, the budget was defeated.
Mm.
Because in Australia, it's possible that even in Malaysia, it's possible the government may have a majority in the lower house, but not in the upper house. Tun Mahathir has a majority in the lower house.
Mm.
He doesn't have a majority in the Dewan Negara.
Mm. That's right.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah. So that's what happened to Whitlam.
Mm.
So Whitlam actually could not pass the budget. The country was in a crisis. The Governor General advised him to call a general election. Whitlam refused.
Mm.
The Governor General sacked him.
Wow. Mm.
Sacked a Prime Minister who had a majority in the lower house.
And he has the power to do that.
Well, it was very controversial.
Yeah.
The issue was that the country was at a standstill.
Mm.
And then Whitlam invited Fraser, leader of the opposition party, but on the condition that you advise me to dissolve the house and call an election. So Fraser was appointed as an interim prime minister on the condition that the country will go into an election. So I think during, as a result of the vote of no confidence, there's a lot of turbulence in the country, possibly.
Mm.
It may not work out as well as, well, a new leader takes over.
Mm-hmm.
There may be a lot of turbulence.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree in general, the Yang Diputan Agong or the governor doesn't have the authority on his own volition to dissolve parliament. And every motion to dissolve parliament must be initiated by the head of government, which is the prime minister.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and just to add a little bit on the point, to prevent political instability, the UK actually introduced a fixed-term parliament
Act.
Whereby, if there is a vote of no confidence and it succeeds, there is a 14-day period in which the government can table a vote of confidence to re-gauge and reassess whether there is still no confidence in the government.
Okay.
So the idea behind that is that, look, people voted you for a fixed term of 4 to 5 years. You should try to finish your term and not be cut short by political machinations and jumpings. So that was something that...
Yeah, actually, that's true. That's very true indeed.
Mm.
Because election should be a matter of last resort
yeah.
for a number of reasons. It costs a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
450 million or so for the 2013. 450 million ringgit it cost. Also, of course, the country gets polarized. Things come to a standstill. I just wanted to add on that.
Mm.
Even in this country, that may be possible, Ajit, that the Prime Minister loses a vote of no confidence. The general assumption is that he must step down or advise dissolution. But there may be nothing to prevent him from saying, hey, we were caught unawares.
Mm-hmm.
That day, it so happened...
many MPs were sick.
MPs were sick or we had a conference somewhere.
Oh, we're not there. Not to vote.
Or the vote took place at 6:30 p.m.
Yeah.
Within a short time, within a few days, he could call for a new vote of confidence, thereby defeating this.
Mm.
I know this has never been necessary, but I think it is possible that a PM may not... You gave the example of Winston Churchill.
Yes.
The PM may lose a vote of no confidence, say, all right, very next day, I want a vote of confidence to be introduced. I know that many years ago, there was a budget vote during Dato Sri Najib's time.
Yeah.
In the evening, the budget was vote was coming.
Yeah.
And evidently, they discovered...
Yeah, almost got defeated, I think.
They discovered that there were not enough Barisan MPs on the floor. So the speaker held the government...
Delayed the vote.
The vote. While I'm told even the PM was summoned to the Dewan Rakyat.
Wow.
Mm. All the ministers were summoned that there is a vote on the budget, and as Vajit pointed out, a vote on the budget is actually a vote of confidence.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Does the Deputy Prime Minister play any role in any of this? Like, you know, if there was to, like, in terms of power transition, right? You know, would it not automatically fall to the DPM, or is that... Okay. Not as unheard of.
Constitutionally, the office of the Deputy Prime Minister doesn't exist.
Doesn't exist.
It's not stated in the Constitution.
Okay.
It is more by political design. You appoint someone as Deputy Prime Minister to give some sort of stability or prediction on who is next in line.
That's right.
But I don't think there's automatic or there is a presumption that the Deputy Prime Minister will assume the Prime Minister's role. Yeah, once it's there's a no confidence.
I support that for two reasons. One is this: the issue is not who is number two in the cabinet. The issue is who commands the confidence on the floor.
That's right.
And Article 43, that's the supreme criterion for the young Dipertuanagong. Who is likely to command the confidence? So with all due respect to any DPM, he or she may not command the confidence in the opinion of the young Dipertuanagong. Mm-hmm. A second factor, not very well known, is this. The PM must be a citizen by operation of law. There's no such requirement for the DPM or for cabinet ministers.
Actually,
it is entirely possible that a cabinet minister who was also selected conventionally, not legally, conventionally as a DPM, may not be a citizen by operation of law, may be a citizen by naturalization or registration.
Mm. Okay, all right. And, you know, we are seeing a power struggle between, we're not seeing a power struggle. I mean, there is reportedly a power struggle.
Let's talk about
a power struggle between, you know, Dr. Atun M and, of course, Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim, right? So if it were to come to that, I mean, I know that the PH Council, they're set to meet on the 21st of February to resolve it, the whole transition of power, right? If the same thing, a vote of no confidence were to be voted on, but to be called on Dato' Sri Anwar if he became Prime Minister, would we see some situations that you were talking about earlier? Was that a possibility as well?
Well, I would think that there is a danger of that because at this present moment, and I say that with sadness, the coherence and cooperation and mutual respect for each other that should exist within a coalition does not exist within the Pakatan Harapan parties. There's a fair amount of sniping at each other. If the PM, let us say, resigns, or some may want to use the word retire, or for whatever reason he's on medical leave, it doesn't necessarily follow that the DPM will be elevated. Mm-hmm. Doesn't necessarily follow that the choice of the Pakatan ruling, what do you call the governing council, presidential council, will necessarily be agreeable to the Yang Dipertuanagong.
Yeah.
Yang Dipertuanagong is guided by this factor. Does the nominee or appointee to be have the support of the majority? But I would think that the Yang Dipertuanagong should listen to the presidential council, but give to the nominee a week or 10 days to say, within 10 days, prove to me.
Yes.
Now, how this proof should come is a matter of controversy. Some will say a vote of no confidence on the floor. Some say maybe a statutory declaration drafted by Lim Wai Jit here.
Yeah. But MPs, I mean, one of the ways in which evidence of support has been shown is, you know, you get statutory declarations from the majority of the MPs in
yes,
parliament.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So it's very clear that this particular individual has confident command of the majority of parliament, or a letter from the PH Presidential Council, any other way. Having said that, there is no necessity in law to have a vote, have this particular individual be put to a vote in parliament to say he has confidence. So that the Agong does not need to go through that process.
Doesn't
Agong,
have to.
On his own volition, I mean, he can choose a person who he believes commands the confidence of the majority in parliament.
Okay, so
I agree with that. Actually, I would hope that normally transition would be smooth and expeditious.
Yep.
But if the parties split down the line, like in Australia it has happened, in some Scandinavian countries, they're split down the line. They threw somebody out, but they cannot decide on who should succeed.
Yeah.
Right.
In such a situation, the king will have to play the role of a statesman, and we'll have to try to find a solution to the crisis. A very interesting issue about this statutory declaration. Someone in my class asked me this question, say, suppose an MP gives a statutory declaration that I'm supporting X.
Yeah.
Can't he change his mind in 2 weeks' time?
Well, then he has to submit that amended statutory declaration to the Agong.
So the statutory declaration is on that particular day or event.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, there is no bar to him changing his mind.
Yeah. So there's no like cause and effect if you one day you make one statutory declaration, then you change it 2 weeks later. I mean, is there no consequence to you for changing things like that?
There'll be no consequence to the MP, but of course, there'll be severe consequences to the nation.
Sure.
Yeah. And to the politics of the nation.
Yeah. No, I understand where you're coming from. I think changing your view on who should be the prime minister, you can do that. But if you, for example, put in an SD that, you know, I drove a car from A to B, and then the next day you say, oh, I didn't drive my car from A to B, that could...
Yeah, that obviously...
That is probably a criminal offence, you know. Offense. Yeah.
So that is a criminal offence, right?
Yeah, but insofar as views are concerned, which are subjective in nature, I suppose you can change your views.
Oh, that doesn't sound very promising. Okay, but one last thing I wanted to ask you about. Another issue that has arisen from this past Secretary General Dato' Taqiyuddin Hassan, he has come out to say that this whole power transition agreement that was finalised by Pakatan Harapan component parties, which of course was before GE14, he says that that goes against the federal constitution. So he said based on Article 42A and 43.2A, the Yang Dipertuan Agong may act in his discretion in the appointment of a prime minister who, in his judgment, is likely to command the confidence of the majority of the members of Dewan Raya, what we were talking about as well.
Well, I want to say this in a light-hearted way. My copy of the Constitution is, latest reprint is 2010. I think the Honourable MP may have the latest version, which I don't have.
I see.
I think this is, this statement should not be taken seriously. It's a very serious misinterpretation of the Constitution. The Yang Dipertuan Agong, without doubt, has a discretion. But if a person clearly commands the confidence of the lower house because his party or his coalition won a commanding majority, then the Yang Dipertuan Agong must accept that verdict.
Okay.
It is in a hung parliament where nobody has a clear majority or where the party leaders are bickering about who should lead the party.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, the Yang Dipertuan Agong plays a role. But in a normal situation where a particular person was the leader of a coalition and he took the party or coalition into the election and they won the election, I don't think the Yang Dipertuan Agong has a discretion in that matter. The Yang Dipertuan Agong should accept the verdict of the electorate. Otherwise, he would be involved in politics. If the Yang Dipertuan Agong chooses someone who does not really command the confidence of the House, then on the very first day, there may be a vote of no confidence in the Yang Dipertuan Agong's nominee. Mm. So I think the suggestion that the Agong has discretion, absolute discretion, under Article 43... as I said, it's not in my copy of the Constitution as it stands in 2010.
Yeah. I echo Prof. Shah's views completely. I think the decision of the PH Presidential Council on who should be the Prime Minister doesn't go against or usurp the Agong's powers. It assists the Agong to reach a decision on who commands the confidence of the majority. If we follow the Dato' Sri Taqiyuddin's logic to its conclusion, it would mean that, you know, during Tun Abdullah's time, when BN agreed among themselves that Najib will take over as prime minister, that is also going against the Agong's powers. You know, it doesn't make any sense.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, Dr. Mahathir has said and he has reiterated that he would transfer power to Dato' Sri Anwar after the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit, APEC, of course, in November. So let's hope that happens and we don't see any...
Yes. We all hope and pray for a smooth transition.
Smooth transition.
And I think this smooth transition and a timetable for a transition will be good for the country.
Yeah, I think the legal, the business community all want a very clear transition plan when there is uncertainty I mean, commerce and business and everything that goes on in this country doesn't go smoothly, and it's bad for the nation. I think we really need to have a very clear transition period.
All right, thank you so much for joining me today. I've been speaking to Emeritus Professor Dato' Dr. Syed Salim Farooqi, a professor of constitutional law at the University of Malaya, and Lim Wee Jiat, a constitutional lawyer. And we were talking about, votes of confidence and no confidence and what that means. If you miss any part of this interview or any previous Law and Behold interviews, you can search for the podcast on our BFM app, available on Google Play, the App Store, and also on Spotify. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.